Good evening. I apologize. We're going to be moving forward in Ksubis, starting on the bottom of Tesamad Aleph, and I realized when I was looking back and preparing for tonight's shir that the place that we stopped is sort of a little bit in the middle of a conversation. So it might behoove us to go back a few steps just to get back into that discussion, and we'll continue from there. When we last met, we were discussing the Gemara's original comment that Rabbi Elazar says, which is that a person who comes in the day after his wedding and claims that his wife, who he thought was a basula, a virgin, turns out was not. And his claim is that she was not. And his way of knowing this is that, not that he didn't see any blood, but that there was what's called a pesach pesuach, that her hymen was broken. In that instance, he's believed in order to create an isser upon himself. In other words, his declaration that she's usher to him only could potentially have several ramifications, and the only ramifications that are valid are the ones that pertain to him. For example, if he and this woman are now not allowed to be married anymore because, as far as he's concerned, she was mizdana, she committed adultery while she was betrothed to him, while they had kedushin, then he is not allowed to be married to her anymore. Excuse me. However, that isser would theoretically apply to her as well, but let's say they would continue to be married and act as husband and wife. He would be doing something wrong by virtue of his claim that Pesach Pesuach Matzasi, and therefore it must be that she committed adultery, but she would be sort of scot-free. She would have done nothing wrong. She does not believe that. She in fact, would potentially be arguing with him. Our Gemara doesn't say exactly what she's claiming, but in any event, there's this idea of what's called, what we call in yeshiva, legabes. The idea that a statement can have a ramification regarding one potential halacha and not regarding another. So in this instance, he's believed regarding his own status, and he's not believed regarding her status. That being said, the Gemara challenged it and said, Rabbi Elazar didn't say that. Rabbi Elazar couldn't be the proponent of that statement because Rabbi Elazar said something else which seems to contradict that directly. So let's pick it up where we left off at the beginning of that contradiction. This is a little bit before we actually finished last time, so we'll just kind of run through the beginning of that conversation in order to re-immerse ourselves, so to speak. About halfway down the page, the first one on the line is Elazar. The Gemara asks as follows. The Ha'om of Elazar, didn't Rabbi Elazar say, Ein ha'isha ne'aseres al baila ela al iske kini yustira? Didn't Rabbi Elazar say that a woman is only usher to her husband? Her husband is only not allowed to be with his wife if it happens through kinui, where there is a jealous warning on the part of the husband saying, and he has to specify that don't be together with that man, with Sira, and where she is seen being concealed with that man, ukemaisa shahaya, and like the incident that happened. And this incident that happened is a reference to the incident of David and Bathsheba. David HaMelech, King David, was in his palace garden or wherever he was, and he saw a woman, Bathsheba, bathing on the rooftop, and as a result of that, he ended up marrying her. Now, it's not our place to judge what exactly King David was doing. The Gemara says, anybody who says that King David sins is Eino Ela Toa, is only making a mistake. So clearly, exactly how to weigh David HaMelech's actions in that instance is, there's some question amongst the Mefarshim, but in any event, that is the incident that happened. And she was at the time a married woman. So the Gemara's statement, Rabbi Elazar's statement, is that seems to be that a woman can only become asur to her husband if she has both of these things, this kinyan and the stira, just like the maaseh that happened. Now the Gemara is going to clarify what exactly this means and how you read it, because it's not so clear if that's even what happened in the incident of David and Bathsheba. Says the Gemara v'tizbara, maaseh shahaya v'kinyan yustira hava, was that maaseh with kinyan yustira? Certainly, her husband Uriah did not give any warning to her about being together with David. And although perhaps there was stira, it certainly didn't have both of those ingredients. Va'od miyasrua. And furthermore, the Gemara wants to ask, was she in fact asur to David HaMelech? We know that David HaMelech went on to marry this woman, so we can presume that David HaMelech would not have done it if she was in fact asur. So my answer is holokasha, and this is just a challenge in terms of understanding the initial statement of Rabbi Elazar before we can figure out whether or not there's any contradiction between Rabbi Elazar's two statements. First, we have to dissect Rabbi Elazar's statement, the second one that we're bringing in about Ma'aseh Shehayah, Kinyan Yustira uch Ma'aseh Shehayah, and then we're going to figure out whether it's a contradiction to the original statement of Omer Pesach was open Sosi Naman Lo Osro Love that we saw on the top of the page. So the Gemara answers holokasha. This is how it means to be said. A woman is only asur to her husband regarding matters of kinyan yustira, mimaisa shahaya, as we see from that incident which happened, the lohava kinyan yustira below itzra, where there was no kinyan yustira and she was not asur. In other words, since there was no kinyan yustira over there, that was why she did not become asur to David, and David was able to marry her. But had there in fact been kinyan, there might have been an isser for David to. There would have been an isser, and therefore we see that kinyan yustira is what creates this isser between man and wife. In instances of potential eishes ish adultery. So the Gemara says mikol makom kashya. Nevertheless, it is still a question because we don't understand how to reconcile these two statements of Rabbi Elazar. The Gemara explains, "Kinyan yustira in Pesach Pesuach lo." You're going to say that the only time a woman becomes asur to her husband is through kinyan yustira, but not through Pesach Pesuach. Rabbi Elazar himself said that a woman could become asur through Pesach Pesuach if her husband says he claims that he found a Pesach Pesuach. The Gemara clearly said he is believed to asur her on him, so he's at least believed regarding his own status as mutter. He's now asur to her, or I should say, she's asur to him. And that's it. We regard that as his status. So, however, the statement of Rabbi Elazar, the second statement of kinyan yustira in, implies that Pesach Pesuach lo, that had he claimed Pesach Pesuach, that would not be enough to asur her to him. So the Gemara responds a little time, and according to you, according to the way you're reading it, and the implication that you're trying to draw, kinyan yustira in Edom lo, it would imply that she's only becomes asur through kinyan yustira, but not through edim. The kinyan yustira system, the system where the husband gives a warning and then witnesses see that man with this woman secluded in a room, is only a system when there weren't witnesses who actually saw the two of them being together. The way Tosfos describes it at the bottom of the page is kemichol v'shofaris, like a paintbrush in the paint, which is a euphemism. In order for witnesses to actually have seen relations between a man and a woman, for that to have any kind of halachic status, for that testimony to have any halachic status, they have to have actually seen relations. Why witnesses in that instance would be allowed to look is a good question, but if they don't, it has far lower or far less halachic basis. So, nevertheless, the Gemara is saying that we know that were there Edom, in an instance where there were Edom, that would for sure create an issue between husband and wife. But although the situation that the Torah describes as Sota is only an instance of Kinyan Yustira, and that's the particular instance where the woman comes into the Beis HaMikdash and she has to drink the special water with Hashem's name erased in it, which is going to either make her explode or going to do nothing, in which case it's a proof of her innocence. But the clear law that is derived from that part of the Torah is that in an instance where there's no kinyan yisira but Adam see it, then of course she's usher to her husband. It's sort of a given. The Torah makes that clear by way of a drasha. So the Gemara wants to say, no, that's a halacha which is derived, which is agreed to by everyone. So the Gemara says, the implication that you're trying to draw, that a woman only becomes usher through kinyan yisira, would imply that witnesses' testimony would not make her usher to her husband. However, that we know that not to be true. So how can you read the Brisa that way? So therefore we have to re-explain how we're going to read this particular Brisa. Ela halchi kama. Rather, it means to be read as follows. Ein ha'isha na'asaras al baila be'ed echad. A woman is not usher to her husband with one aid, ela b'shne aidim. Rather, it has to be with two aidim. Two aidim will make a woman usher to her husband. V'kini yustira, however, when it's done through this system of kini yustira, where the husband warned her against being secluded with this man, and witnesses saw that she was secluded with that man, even if it's with one aid, also, that alone would be enough to asa the woman to her husband. In other words, if there was witnesses to the fact that he warned her, and witnesses to the fact that she secluded herself with one man, with this particular man, and one witness who saw that they did in fact have relations, that one witness together with the kinyan yisira system would be enough to create an iser upon her husband of her. In other words, the normal case of sota is when there's no eid echad, when there's not one witness who saw the adulterer and the wife together, and there's only witnesses to the fact that there was kinyan and stira, the warning and the seclusion. In that instance, that's where the woman would be drinking the special sota drink that we know is what gives our sota drink its name. Just kidding. So, because of the fact that she might not be in the Beis HaMikdash, or perhaps there is no Beis HaMikdash, or in any event, when there is an Eid Echad that saw the adulterer and the wife having relations, that would be enough to asa her. And the Gemara now says something else, which is, again, this reading of the Brisa is so seemingly convoluted. It's hard to understand how the author of the Brisa would have expected us to derive this. The Gemara goes on to say, U'pezach pasuach v'shnei edim dami. And Pesach Pasuach, an instance where that the husband sees that the wife's hymen was broken, is considered like two witnesses in terms of creating a status of Isser upon the husband, that the husband is no longer allowed to be with his wife. Just in terms of addressing that question that we just raised, how the author of the Brisa would have expected us to derive this reading from what he wrote, which seemingly was very different, perhaps we can say simply that the Gemara jumped through hoops to try and find an explanation of the Brisa, which was logical, reasonable, and workable. And this is the first reading they were able to come up with, which actually seemed to make sense. And the author of the Brisa was able to write the Brisa in such a way, knowing that no other reading of the Brisa other than the one that he intended us to find was possible, although he wrote it in what seems like a backwards way. And although I don't know of anybody who addresses this question, perhaps some of the Rishonim do, perhaps the Tana was writing the Brisa in this way because it was shorter. And the Tanaim were certainly known for their brevity of speech. Okay, so that's where we left off at the end of last week. At the end of that discussion. And now the Gemara wants to ask a different question on the Brisa. In other words, now that we've given this new reading of the Brisa, we no longer have a contradiction between two statements of Rebbe Elazar. Because in both statements, one who says Pesach Pesuach is in fact believed to create an Isser upon himself from being with his wife. And in fact, that statement of Pesach Pesuach is so strong, if the husband makes that claim, it's considered like two witnesses. He has absolute believability. So now the Gemara wants to ask as follows: V'chitema ma'isa shahoya nivne malo asruha. And if you'll say, well, that incident that happened with David HaMelech and Bathsheba that the statement of Rebbe Elazar referred to, why, in fact, was she not usher to David HaMelech? We know that the halacha is that there is an isser when a woman sleeps with someone who's not her husband. An isser is created on her husband and on the adulterer with whom she slept. So David HaMelech in this instance plays the role of David HaMelech will be playing the role of the adulterer, which of course sounds completely contrary to everything we know about David HaMelech. And again, we cannot without a tremendous amount of research on the subject claim to understand what exactly was happening in this incident with David HaMelech. However, the Gemara feels strongly enough about it that they can ask the question, why in fact was this Isser not created on David HaMelech? So my answer is Hasam Onas Hava. Over there it was an Onas. David HaMelech was acting against his own will. This statement of the Gemara is extraordinarily cryptic, very hard to understand. The Gemara seems to be saying that David HaMelech's taiva was so strong that he no longer possessed the free will to resist and not first sleep with and then marry this woman, although when he initially was with her, she was already a married woman. Just to try and make the statement of the Gemara make a little bit more sense, when discussing, just to try and understand it a little bit more, the idea of not having free will when it comes to Arnes Yonos is something which is ordinarily we consider anathema to the Jewish faith. We generally assume that God does not give us tests that we cannot pass. And this is always the truth, really, even in the case of David HaMelech, because a test which we're not expected to be able to pass is not a test at all, but rather just Hashem kind of running us through hoops. So, in terms of understanding the Hashkafa behind it, there's sort of a life view which says that every test that we have from Hashem, every instance in which we're challenged and expected to rise to the occasion, those nisyonos are only given to us if we can pass them. And if we cannot pass them, then Hashem knows what we're going to do ahead of time. And we're not held accountable for our actions because there are challenges that we cannot pass. To further explain it, perhaps get a clearer understanding, there's a Sfarno that says that when Yosef HaTzadik, when his brothers sold him down to Mitzrayim, and his brothers, although they had a calculation for why it was okay to sell him, because they felt that Yosef had the status of what's called a rodef, someone who was trying to kill them, because he was giving reports about them to their father, and so on, they felt that they had reason to suspect that Yosef was trying to do them in. They therefore felt that they had no choice but to sell him to Mitzrayim and get him out of their way. They didn't need to kill him, although he was trying to do that according to them, but they did need to get him out of the picture, so to speak, and so they sold him down to Mitzrayim. The Sfarno says that this action by the brothers, because of the fact that it was a necessary part of the course of history that had to be taken, and it was a necessary part of the path that the Jewish people needed to take by going down to Mitzrayim and being in slavery for 210 years and then going out of Mitzrayim and so on and so forth, that first step of Yosef being sold was a necessary step. And therefore, although the brothers would not have done it of their own accord, because in fact it was wrong, and it's, you know, many of the commentators struggle to explain how the brothers could have done something so egregiously wrong, the Sfarno says simply that Hashem sort of took away their free will in that particular instance. He took away the Bechira, and he sort of, you know, unscrewed a couple of the Bechira screws in their heads, so to speak, and pretty much orchestrated the event on his own. You know, obviously everything Hashem does is on his own, but ordinarily we believe that there's a certain amount of Bechira, free choice involved for every one of us. In that instance, Hashem took away that Bechira, and therefore the brothers weren't even liable for what they were doing at that time, and they certainly would never got punished for it. That's the way the Sfarno understands the incident of the brothers selling Yosef down to Mitzrayim. So perhaps here also, David was an ones in that kind of context. That Hashem sort of, maybe not by literally forcing David to do it, but by giving him a challenge in which he was unable to pass. In any event, it's a very hard concept to understand, and perhaps there are Rishonim who say a different explanation of this step of the Gemara, and if there are, I would love to hear it. I certainly don't know of it. But in any event, just a nice little hashkafic sidebar over there. So that's the Gemara's answer. And therefore, since it was an onus, David HaMelech was considered sort of free of sin, and therefore he was not considered sort of eligible. He would, the issur that's ordinarily applied to the adulterer does not apply in this case. Now, just to clarify, there's two explanations, but the Rashi and Tosfos differ how we understand the statement of Mipnei Malo Asura earlier in the Gemara. Rashi says Mipnei Malo Asura al David. Why was she not usher to David? Ashari Edom Harbe Yadu. Many witnesses knew what had occurred. So certainly, if witnesses saw, then David HaMelech should have been usher. Now, if we learn like Rashi, the answer of Hasan Onus Hav is hard to understand, because whether a person's sort of onus or not, the halacha of the Torah still applies. For example, a person who eats pig, if two witnesses see him, and they give him a warning ahead of time, and he does it anyway, he gets lashes, 39 lashes. That is the halacha of the Torah, and of course it's not relevant nowadays because Beis Din is not in charge, but in theory, that's the halacha, it should be true. And Beis Din has every right to give those lashes to that person. Now let us say, for example, that that burger, that tray piece of meat that was put in front of the person was so tempting, and the person was so hungry, assuming it was not a life-threatening hunger, but it was an issayon, a challenge that the person was unable to pass. And in fact, Hashem was putting this challenge in front of the person not in order to test him and to see if he would refrain from eating the tray of meat, because Hashem knows he can't pass this issayon. And rather, perhaps the challenge Hashem is putting in front of him is to see how he'll be able to deal with his emotions after the fact, or whatever reasons Hashem might have for creating such a situation. Whatever Hashem's motives may be, whatever the reason it might happen, if the person is in fact beyond his power of choice, Beis Din is still going to give the person lashes if there were witnesses and he got warned and so on. So it's a little bit hard to understand, according to Rashi, how the Gemara's answer of Hasan Onus Hava really addresses the question. If many witnesses saw that he was together with Bathsheba, and the halacha says that the boel, the adulterer, is not allowed to marry this woman, so how could a Beis Din, if there were Edom that knew, allow David HaMelech to marry this woman? So it's a little bit unclear how, according to Rashi, the Gemara's answer works. However, according to Tosfos, the Gemara's answer is a little bit easier to understand. Let's take a look at Tosfos. The bottom Tosfos on the page, Mipnei Malo Asruha. Perish HaKuntrus, Rashi explains, Valo Oso Maisa Be'edim Hava. That was Rashi's explanation of this question, that incident that happened with David HaMelech was with Edom watching. Ve'in Nira. And Tosu says the Rashi's explanation doesn't appear to be correct. That granted it was known to many that he brought her to his house. They did not see it like the paintbrush in the paint. That in front of people, David HaMelech would not have had relations with this woman. Which is a pretty solid assumption. David HaMelech certainly, as the king, had the ability to grant himself privacy if he chose. So how would witnesses may have known, but witnesses who know that David HaMelech brought the woman to his house, even if they know why David HaMelech brought her to his house, if they didn't see the actual incident occur, if they didn't see the actual deed done, they can't testify with enough power to create an issur between David HaMelech and this woman Bathsheba. So therefore, how, Rashi, does it make sense that Mibnei Malo Asur, the Gemara's question of why was she not Asur? I'll tell you why she wasn't Asur, because the witnesses didn't see. So there wasn't kinyus dira. There wasn't actually witnesses seeing. So the halacha of the adulterer being Asur to the woman should not apply. So Tosfos explains, rather, v'nir l'ri l'farish. The Ri wants to explain, rather, the question is as follows. Vim tomar de pesach pasuach kishnei edim domi. Now the Gemara just said that pesach pasuach is kishnei edim. Amai lo asur hola David. Why was she not asur to David? The David haya yodea b'vale shenevela. David knew for sure that he had been together with this woman, even if nobody else knew. David himself knew. The aval pish asa tshuva, and even though he may have done, he may have repented from whatever amount of sin that there was on his behalf, mikol makom ikva. Nevertheless, he would have stopped. V'im haisa asura lo, and if she was asur to him, lo haya osa tzadik lo klo lisha. That righteous one, David HaMelech, would not have taken her as a wife. Meaning, if he knew that in heaven there was, it was known that he was together with this woman, and therefore there was an isser created upon him to be with her, he would not have married her. And therefore, the Gemara's answer of Hasan Onas Hava, that he was forced, is very good now, because the only reason David HaMelech would have not been together with this woman is because of his own foreknowledge, because of his own knowledge of what happened between him and her, not because of any edim. But if his knowledge of the situation was also enough to know that he was in fact an onus, he was in fact forced, and there was no culpability on his part, so then it would make sense that he would be able to say, well, even though I know what happened, I also know that I was not liable for what I did, and therefore it should not create the isser of a boel being together with a woman. One other advantage to Tosfos' explanation of the Gemara is the fact that now the chitema that the Gemara says, v'chitema ma'isa shahayu mipnei malo asruha, right, about three lines up from the bottom of the page in the Gemara over there, when the Gemara asks that question, now flows directly from the previous statement, v'pesach v'suach kishnei edin dami, and is not simply a random question on the understanding of Rabbi Lazar's statements, or really the incident of David. It's really, according to Rashi, it's almost sort of a question for the commentators. Like, there's an incident which occurred in Navi. Amai said that David HaMelech was with Bathsheba. Why was he allowed to marry her after the fact? If there's a halacha that the adulterer is not allowed to marry the woman he was with. And so the commentators can come up with whatever answers they can, but it's unclear why Agamar should be dealing with it. But according to Tosfos, it's very clear why Agamar should be dealing with it. We just said the Pesach Pesuach is Kishnei Eden Dami, that a person who's together with a woman, his claiming that that happened has the level of belief of Naimonos as if two witnesses had said it, which we know in Jewish law is the highest level of belief that there is. So if a person making that statement has that level of nemanos, so then the same thing should have been true by David HaMelech. David HaMelech, why was she not Aser? He knew. He had absolute knowledge of what the truth was, and that knowledge should have been enough. And the Gemara's answer is that no, in fact, he knew he was an onus, and therefore that was enough of a reason to sort of not create or prevent that Iser from being created. The Gemara gives another answer to this question. Vivayis Ema. Another answer why there would not have been an Isser created between David and Bathsheba. Ki had the Amr of Shmuel bar Nachmeni Amr of Yonason. Like Rav Shmuel bar Nachmeni said in the name of Rav Yonason. Now on the top of Tesam of Beis. Kol hayotzi l'melchames Beis David. Anybody who goes out to war on behalf of David HaMelech. Get krisus kosev l'ishto. He would write a get to his wife. A divorce contract. Tichsiv ve'es achicha tifka l'shalom ve'es arabasan tikach. My ve'es arabasan tikach. What does that statement of the pasuk ve'es arabasan tikach refer to? Tanya Rav Yosef, dvarim hamuravin beino levena. Matters which are mixed in, which are sort of, which we can explain not rather than being mixed in, but are collateral between him and her. And Rashi explains, if we take a look at the top, Rashi and Tesamad Beis, get krisus kosev v'ishto, She'im yamos b'molchama. If he would die in war, yehi get miyom ksivah. So there would be the worst contract from the day he wrote it. V'harei meis Uriah b'molchama. And Uriah, who was the husband of Bathsheba, the woman that David HaMelech took to his house, died in war. Dichtiv, and the Gemara, this is the Rashi in which the Gemara quoted the pasuk. Rashi says Dichtiv b'molchemes shal. It says by the wars that Shaul fought, v'yasachicha v'chule, this pasuk, v'David lamad miYishai aviv, and David learned from Yishai his father lahanhig to have that custom. Sha'af hayotzen v'melchamosav, even knows who had gone to his own wars, Osin Cain, should do this. In other words, David followed in the footsteps of Shaul, which was an idea that he learned from Yishai his father. And what exactly was this custom? As she says, Devarim Hamu Ravim Beinolovina Elu Kedushin, and these are a reference to Kedushin. Tikach, Rashi explains, Titol mi Beinem Ayidei Get, should be taken from them by way of a divorce contract. In other words, V'esa Rabasim Tikach, that pasuk, the way that the custom was for the soldiers going out to war during the time of David HaMelech, was that they would take the matters that are between him and her. What are the matters between him and her, meaning between husband and wife? Those are the fact that they are married, the Kedushin. So taking them away would be done by a get. And therefore we see that the pasuk is telling us that there was a custom for every soldier who went out to war to write a divorce contract to his wife conditionally, with the provision that if he does not return from war, that the divorce contract should be valid from the day that he wrote it. And therefore, if the divorce contract was sort of valid, had validity from the day that it was written, and Uriah had already left for war before this incident of David taking Bathsheba into his house, therefore when he died, it retroactively turned out that the divorce of Uriah and Bathsheba was effective before David HaMelech had ever been together with Bathsheba. And therefore, retroactively, it comes out that David HaMelech had not slept with a married woman. And therefore, there was no isser of that we ordinarily find between adulterer and wife. And this is the Gemara's second approach to answer this question. Tosfos on the top of Testament Beis decries Rashi's pshat and says that there has to be a different explanation for how exactly this divorce contract was created in a retroactive way with this provision of death. And it's a very technical legal discussion about how retroactive divorce contracts work. It's something that we've certainly discussed a decent amount already in this Masechta, and for further elucidation and erudition, see Tosfos Divar Maaseh Kol Hayotzei B'Melchamos Beis David at the top of Testament Beis. But I believe it is beyond the scope of our discussion tonight. Okay, moving forward. So now that we have addressed that second statement of Rav Elazar, we've erased or avoided any potential contradiction between the two statements of Rav Elazar and explained that second statement of Rav Elazar in full, we can take a look at the Tav on the days at this, the next question that the Gemara is going to have, attacking the statement of Rav Elazar. Amar Abaye. Abaye says, Af anan nami tanina. We also already learned this. A reference to Rav Elazar's statement of Kol Omer Pesach Vesuach Neman Lo Israelov. And Abaye's attack is essentially, since we already learned this, ordinarily we would think, if we see we already learned it somewhere else, that would be, if anything, a proof to Rav Elazar's statement being true. But because of the system we know in which nothing unnecessary is ever stated by the Tanayim, by the various Tanaic authors, therefore if we already had it written in some other Mishnah, Rav Elazar would not need to come along and say it. So let's see what Abaye is referring to when he says we already have written and therefore Rav Elazar shouldn't have said it. Furthermore, just to clarify, Rav Elazar himself is an Amora. So if Rav Elazar would be saying this statement of Kol Omer Pesach Vesuach Masal Sinam and Osra Love, it would be a problem if he was reiterating a halacha which was already stated in a Mishnah. I apologize for the pause. I'm just double checking to make sure that Rav Elazar is in fact an Amora. I was under that impression, but now I'm rethinking it and I'm not 100% sure. I believe he is, but the Gemara's question is either because an Amora shouldn't repeat something that a Mishnah says, or because two Mishnayos saying the same halacha is unnecessary. In any event, the Gemara's challenge is that Rav Elazar is saying something that's unnecessary. Why? Because we already saw it in the Mishnah written. Basula nisus liyom harvi. This is our Mishnah on Beis Amud Aleph, our first Mishnah of our Masechta, that a virgin gets married on Wednesday. Liyom harvi in. On the day, on Wednesday, she can get married. Liyom hachamishi lo. But on Thursday, not. That's the pretty clear inference. The implication of our Mishnah is that Thursday is off limits. My time. Well, what's the reason that Thursday is no good? Mishum akuri daita. Because of this concern of the chasen cooling off. In other words, we want him to be very upset should he find out that his wife, who he thought was a virgin, is not. Enough, upset enough that he'll come to Beth and make a claim about it. And therefore we'll be able to ensure that husband and wife who are not allowed to be together aren't together. And that's why Wednesday night is the night they should be together, because Thursday morning is the normal day for courts to be in session. However, if they would get married on Thursday, the next day the courts would be in session would be Monday, and by that point the chassan may say, you know what, it's not worth it, forget it, I still like her, I married her for a reason, right? And therefore he may choose not to come into court and make any sort of claim. And the Gemara wants to know, ulamai, and for what purpose do we want him to come in? What are we concerned about cooling off? What ramification are we concerned with? Even Mesav Laksuba, if it is to make sure that he is going to give her a ksuba, Nesivla, let him give it to her. In other words, if our concern is that if he doesn't come in, he's going to give her a ksuba anyway, meaning because now that she has turned, it turns out that she committed adultery while they were engaged, she therefore doesn't deserve a ksuba, and yet we're concerned that if the husband sort of keeps her as his wife, he's going to end up giving her a ksuba. So let him give her a ksuba. Why are we so concerned that that shouldn't happen? That's sort of his business. It's his money. Rather, it must be because we're concerned with the isser involved, with the potential isser between husband and wife. Then he's making some sort of a claim against her virginity. My love is not the katoin taina pesach pasuach. That he's making a claim that he found the pesach pasuach, and yet we see that he's believed to come in, make that claim, and create this isser. So what does Rav Elazar need to come and tell us for? We already saw it in this Mishnah, on Beis Amud Aleph. Again, the Mishnah didn't say it explicitly, but any halacha that can be derived from a Mishnah is considered as if the Mishnah said it already and taught it to us. So what does Rav Elazar need to reiterate it for? So for the Gemara answers, lo, that's not what the case of that claim in that Mishnah on Beis Amud Aleph would be. It's not in order for him to come in and make a claim of Pesach Pasuach. The Gatoin Tainas Damim. It's that he's making a claim that there was no blood. He has the sort of the cloth on which the blood was supposed to be found, and there was no blood, and that's a clear indication that she was not a virgin, and therefore that's why he's making some kind of claim against her virginity. Let's take a look at Rashi. Af ananami tanina, the Toin Pesach Pasuach Matsasi Asra Alav. That one who claims Pesach, that I found the Pesach Pasuach, asers her to him, v'lo amrinon lo kimle. And we don't say that he doesn't, I guess the reason why he wouldn't be believed is that maybe he's lo kimle, that he's not so sure. In other words, he may think he's sure, but we don't give him the believability to say that she's a virgin. We say, you think so, but we're pretty confident you're making a mistake, and we have reason to believe that that's not true. And therefore, we would sort of discount what he's saying. Rather, this Mishnah is telling us, no, we don't discount what he's saying. We listen to what he's saying. Ikuri Dait, this is Rashi. Ad Sheni B'Shavas Habal, until the following Monday, which is the next time the court would be in session, and he'd be able to go in and make a claim. Ulumai Kapti Rabbanan, for what reason were the Rabbanan concerned? Were the Rabbanan, like, careful, makpid? Imikur Daita, if he becomes cooled off. Nesibla. That if the concern is that he's going to give her the ksuba anyway, so let him give it to her. Why should we cause her to lose out by Rehu no semidas? He's giving it knowing that there's a problem, and he's giving it anyway, so that's his trouble. If he wants to, you know, if it's just a question of monetary loss, that she no longer deserves that money, which would be owed to her from the ksuba, and he could lay claim to not pay her and say, I don't owe it. If he wants to give it anyway, that's his problem. El alav lo usra, hu dekavtinan shelo yikara daito. Rather, it must be that it's in order to answer her that the Rabbanon were makpid that he shouldn't become kam. V'yikayim esal surlo, and stay married to a woman who is usher to her, Alma. Therefore we see, ki asin v'tain, when he comes and makes a claim, asrin la'ala, we asher her to him, and so we already knew this halacha of one who comes in and claims Pesach Vesuach is not allowed to stay married to his wife. So the Gemara answers, Taina is Damim. The Taina of Ureresi, that it's a clear Taina, of Aleka Lomemar Lo Kimle. And we don't say Lo Kimle, that this is not a Taina about which we would say that we don't discount what he's saying. Aval, Mepezach Vesuach, Emelacha Lo Kimle. In other words, if I just had that Mishnah on Beis Din Aleph, I would know that he's believed when he says damim, when he comes in with the cloth and says, clearly I see that there's no blood in this cloth and therefore that's why I'm making a claim. But when he comes in as a Pesach Pesuach, maybe in that instance we would in fact discount what he's saying. And therefore we needed Rabbi Elazar to come along and tell us that we don't discount what he's saying when he says Pesach Pesuach. It seems that the Gemara feels that we want to give the Mishnah the smallest chiddush possible. This is a rule we generally find when it comes to Mishnahs, that if the Mishnah could be teaching me one of two different things, and one of them is a bigger chiddush than the other, one of them is sort of more of a groundbreaking halacha, is a halacha that's further from what I would have thought than the other, we presume that the author of that Mishnah was trying to teach us the smaller chiddush, the chiddush of less halachic significance, so to speak. Not significance in terms of ramification, but significance in terms of how much further it is from what we would have thought. We assume that it's the smaller one until we can prove otherwise. Until we see clearly that the author of that mission is specified otherwise, we assume that it's the smallest chiddush. However, it's a bit troubling if the Gemara, if that rule is always true, and it should have been true even in the Gemara's question, so why did the Gemara even think that maybe it was talking about Tainas Pesach Pesuach? Why wouldn't we just assume it's talking about Tainas Dam, which is in fact the smaller chiddush? Tosfos addresses this question. Tosfos says, in Dibra Maskel, my lavik hatoin Tainas Pesach Pesuach, near Lefarish, the Kosak Adaita of the Tainas Damim, Lekalomechish Lekuri Daita. The Hafamin of the Gemara thought that in a case of Tainas Damim, because of the fact that it's so clear, in a case where he's holding up this cloth and saying there's no blood on it, so of course it's quite clear to him that she's usher to him and he can't stay married to her and so on and so forth, there's no concern about maybe him cooling off and not coming into Beis Din even if it's not till the following Monday. In other words, were that what we were concerned about, if that was the only concern, we would say get married on Thursday, even if you're not going to be able to come into court to make a claim until the following Monday. Given the lack of dam, that since there is no blood on the cloth, libo nokvo, his heart grabs him. Vein miskar, and he doesn't calm down. He remains upset about this potential issue which he'd be committing every time he's together with his wife, because of the fact that he's sort of, the cloth without the blood on it is sort of staring him in the face and making a clear point, hey, this woman is usher to you, you're not allowed to be with her. But when it comes to Pesach Pesuach, where it's just his memory of what happened and sort of what he encountered, therefore it's much easier for him to sort of rationalize to himself, and in that instance, there's to be concerned that maybe he would cool down. And therefore when the Gemara answers that really our Mishnah is addressing Tainas Damim, apparently the Gemara's answer feels that we would potentially be concerned that even with that cloth staring him in the face, he'll still potentially rationalize. Just an idea for us to think about is how far a person can rationalize. He's got the cloth without the blood on it staring him in the face, making it clear that this woman is usher to him, and yet still he can sort of rationalize to himself somehow, even if he knows the halacha, that still he doesn't have to go in and make any kind of claim and follow up on it. That's the human power for rationalization. The Gemara continues now with another statement which is in fact the dissenting opinion against this statement of Rabbi Elazar. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Shmuel, Ha'omer Pesach Pasulach Matzasi, one who says that I found a Pesach Pasulach when I was together with my wife, Ne'eman La'afsidik Suvasa, his belief stretches beyond just creating an Isser Legabe himself in regards to his own status, but rather he's even believed to make her lose out on her marital contract when he divorces her. The next statement of the Gemara is a little bit interesting. The Gemara says, Amar of Yosef. Rav Yosef says, my kamashim, he's sort of challenging, what is this coming to teach us? We knew this already. Tanina. We learned it in a Mishnah. Ha'ochel esel cham of Yehuda, shelo be'edim, one who eats by his father-in-law in Yehuda without witnesses, eino yachol utan tanis besulam, mibnesh misyached ima. Excuse me, mibnesh misyached ima, because of the fact that he's secluded with her. Now, before we get into exactly what this Mishnah is saying, it's clear that Rav Yosef's attack on Shmuel is that we already knew this halacha. But didn't Abayi just ask on Rav Elazar that we already knew this halacha, and Rav Elazar's halacha is different than Shmuel's, because Rav Elazar's halacha says that he's only believed to asra on himself, and Shmuel's halacha is that he's even believed to make her lose out on her ksuba? Furthermore, if Rav Yosef has some source that we know this halacha of Shmuel from somewhere else, so couldn't Abaye have attacked Rav Elazar even from this Mishnah? It's very unclear, and let's perhaps if we go further in the Gemara, we'll come out with some kind of an explanation for it. The Gemara says as follows, that we see, Rav Yosef is saying, we see the following Mishnah. One who eats by his father-in-law in Yehuda. In other words, you have a couple who are engaged. They've done Kedushin. And the chassan is eating at the home of his future in-laws. Or really, it's his current in-laws, because Kedushin is a certain level of marriage. Without Edom. And there are no witnesses there to attest to what happens between the betrothed chassan and kala. He is not able to make a claim against her virginity after they are married, because of the fact that they are secluded. And it seems to be something that comes up a few times in the Masechta, that in the land, the part of Eretz Yisrael, which is referred to as Yehuda, the minhag was that the chassan and kala were betrothed, even though they're not married, they were allowed to be miyached with each other, even though ordinarily the hilchos yichud should apply, and certainly when it comes to engaged couples nowadays who have not even done kedushin, they're not allowed to be miyached any more than the other boy or girl, or any other man or woman. In Yehuda, they had the minhag when couples were engaged, but more than engaged, betrothed religiously through kedushin, that they would do yichud. And because of this yichud, if there were no edim, which again, that's the definition of yichud, is that there are no edim, then he's not allowed to make a claim against her virginity, because we suspect that maybe they may have been together during that time, and therefore if he would make a claim, we would say, we don't believe you because we suspect that you were together with your wife even before the nisuin. So Rav Yosef makes a very simple inference. It's in the part of Eretz Yisrael known as Yehuda where he's not allowed to make a claim against her virginity. But in Gaul, he would be allowed to make, or he would be able to make a claim against her virginity. Ulamai. And for what halacha? If it's just to make her aser, which is the other potential ramification, Yehuda amaylo. Why in Yehuda would we stop him from creating this Isser? If he believes that he wasn't together with her and that she was not a virgin as a result of somebody besides for him, then he's not allowed to be married to her. So then, if that's his belief, why shouldn't we believe him in regards to himself? We would believe him. Elolav. So rather, if we don't allow him to make a claim, it must be that the reason that he would be making a claim is lahafsid the ksubasa, to make her lose out on her ksuba. Udikotarin Taina, he's making some kind of a claim against her Besulim, against her virginity. My love, is it not the Kotarin Taina is Pesach Pesuach, and he's making a claim of Pesach Pesuach? But after he gets married to her, he says there was a Pesach Pesuach, and I know it wasn't for me, and therefore she must have committed adultery, and therefore I shouldn't be obligated to pay her ksuba now that I'm going to divorce her. So the Gemara sounds low. No, that is not the case. The Kotarin Taina is dumb. It must be rather that he claims that he did not find blood on that cloth. A similar back and forth to the one we had earlier in the Gemara. Let us see Rashi's explanation of it. Rashi says, Ha'ochel eitzel chametz. Excuse me. Let's take a look at Rashi and Shmuel first. Taina is dumb. La'afsidik subas, excuse me. Rashi says, La'afsidik subasa al pi atzmo. On his own statement. The time of the Kaman, and the reason why he'd be believed to this extent to cause her to lose out, not just regarding him, is explained later on. Chazaka in adam terech pesudo mafsida. And this is something that we're going to see, hopefully, the next time we're together on Yod Amud Aleph, next time we have a shiur, which discusses that a person, a chassan, who typically, I guess, certainly that was the custom back in the day, so to speak, the custom was for the chassan to arrange the wedding feast. A chassan would not go to such great lengths to create a wedding feast and a whole party and all the other trappings that go together with that, and then lose it only in order to avoid having to pay the ksuba. The ksuba was 200 zuz. That was the sort of the standard ksuba. There could be a ksuba written for more, but that was the standard that Bezdin could enforce, even if no contract was written. Presumably, a chassan who went to all that trouble, and not just the money that he would put into making the feast, but also just the difficulty, the tircha. So, if a chassan went to all that trouble, presumably he wouldn't want to simply lose out on the ksuba unless he really felt that he wasn't supposed to be giving her ksuba and he couldn't be married to her. In other words, if he was telling the truth. Let's take a look at Rashi further. We're going to see that idea further on when we get to Yonah Madal, but in the meantime, let's take a look at the rest of these Rashis. Ha'ochel eitzel chametz b'yomim shebein erusin l'nisuin, during the time which is between Kedushin, which is the betrothal, and Nisuin, the full marriage, ein yachol itan tainas bezulin. He's not able to claim tainas bezulin k'shitin konis the chuppah after he has brought her into the chuppah and married her. Mipneishim isyachinim al b'Yehuda. Because he was secluded with her. Yehuda, they had this custom to seclude the chassan together with the kala, even during the kedushin, in order that his heart should be heavy with her, in order that he should get stricken with her. They want the chassan to be even more in love with the kala than he already is. Yehuda amaylo. In Yehuda, why is he not able to make such a claim? Ha'omer. One who says, Pshita li shelo basi eleha, I know that I was not, it's obvious to me that I did not have relations with her during the time that we were together. She was surely, this happened, now that she's not a virgin, happened because she committed adultery with someone else. So shavi alechati chadi sura. We saw this phrase on Testament Aleph. He is thrown upon himself a piece of prohibition. In other words, he is created an Isser upon himself. So, Mali Galil, Mali Yehuda. What would be the difference if it's in Galil or Yehuda? Why did the Mishnah specify that it's clearly Yehuda? And the Gemara goes on to say, Elalav lafsidik suvas, it must be it's in order to make her lose out on her ksuba of Yehuda lo mafsid alpiv. And in Yehuda, in that part of the country, she would not lose out just by what he said. The Amrinan, Huba Allah Be'erison, that we say that he had Bia with her, he had relations with her during Erison. Uvagol Masitan, but in Gol, he would be allowed to make such a claim to Halon Isiache, because he did not have seclusion with her. My love, because Tony Tan has Pesach Pesuach Matsasi, and it must be that he made a claim of Pesach Pesuach. And yet, we see that he's able to make a claim of Pesach Pesuach to make her lose the ksuba. So Shmuel, your halacha is a repetition of a brisa. something we already knew. Even though there are no witnesses in this matter, and it's not a proven taina, ella Allah, and rather we're just relying on him, the Amrinan, that we say, if it wasn't the truth, he wouldn't lose out on his feast, so to speak. This idea of Anadam Torah Chesudah Mafsida, the person would not go to great lengths to create a wedding feast and all the trappings and then lose it out just in order to avoid the ksuba. And if he had really hated her originally and never wanted to marry her in the first place, he would have divorced her and not gone to such lengths to create this wedding feast. However, in Yehuda, in that part of the country of Yehuda, he would not be believed. Shema Baal b'mei Erison. Perhaps he had relations with her during Erison. V'shachach, and he forgot. Oheraba mitoch kibasa, or he did some kind of a quasi relations where he thought that what he had done had not broken the hymen, but in fact, v'loyoda shashi rebesua. In fact, he didn't know, but he did in fact go so far as to make her not a virgin anymore. So the Gemara answered, "Lo, the katani tainas dalmim." Really, what happened was he did in fact make a claim of tainas dalmim. The olam emelcha. Really, I'll tell you, b'davar she'ena yachal avaro, by something he's not able to clarify with his no like cloth what that has or doesn't have blood on it, but rather his own memory of whether or not it was a pesach v'suach. Eino neman la'asik suba. So there, in fact, he would not be believed to make her lose out on the suba. And that would, in fact, dovetail with Rav Elazar. V'diyuka demasnisin zaykinan habegal matzitan. And that inference that you made, that it sounds like in Galil, in the part of the country where there was no Yichud, he would be able to claim Tanas Damim. So he would be able to make a claim against her virginity. The Tanas Damim, the case is where he made a claim that there was no Dam, and he had the cloth to prove it. Chagon Shahu Lehem Shishbinim, they had those assistants that we mentioned before who made sure that the cloth was there, and so on. Shemishamshu Osan, V'lo Nasis Ona V'davar. Who make sure that there's no trickery or treachery done in the matter of whether or not she was a basula, v'lo-ra, and he didn't see it, v'ibed, and then the cloth is lost, v'tana b'ruhi. But at the same time, although the cloth is not here, he did see it, and so although the cloth is lost, he feels he has a definitive claim to make. But just going back quickly to that question we had before about why this question wasn't a question in Rabbi Elazar, it's unclear what exactly the Gemara thought, why the Gemara assumed it was Tainas Pesach Pesuach and not Tainas Damim. If the reason that they thought it was Pesach Pesuach and not Tainas Damim is because of the fact, like Tosa said earlier, that they would have thought that there's no concern of a Kuri Daita by Pesach Pesuach, we can't really say that here, because here we're not discussing any kind of a Kuri Daita. The halacha is not relevant to getting married on Wednesday versus Thursday. The halacha is just relevant to making the claim in general, regardless of what day of the week it is. So it's not clear why the Gemara would have assumed Pesach Pesuach in the first place. It could be because we always assume that all cases are included until we know for sure otherwise. But because it's such an easy answer, like the Gemara said, the Katan Tanah Damim, which fits so well with Rabbi Elazar, it's possible that's why we wouldn't have asked on Rabbi Elazar. Whereas in Shmuel, perhaps because of the fact that Shmuel holds that Pesach Pesuach is believed even to be Mafsid Ksuba, if you Shmuel hold that's true, then that means you Shmuel don't have any differentiation between Pesach Pesuach and Tainas Damim. And if there's no differentiation, then presumably all cases should be included, and the Gemara's answer that really is only referring to Tainas Damim, even though according to you they're really both the same, is somewhat more novel, somewhat more of a surprising reading of that brisa. Perhaps we could say such an approach in the Gemara. In any event, we're going to stop here for this week, and we'll continue at the top of Yom Aleph, Bez Hashem, next week. Have a good week, everyone.